Hi, Paul Sackett, Good News Planet, speaking to Dr. Lee Schwamm. Hi, Doctor. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having us on.
You and the American Heart Association are doing very, very important work, and it's a big honor for us. In situations that are life-concerning, life-threatening, and not handled properly, could be fatal. So we're going to talk today about advocacy, how to get access to life-saving stroke treatments. Dr. Schwamm is professor of neurology at Harvard Medical School, executive vice chairman of neurology at Massachusetts General Hospital. You're dealing with stroke services, the hospitals over there, with the first major telestroke network in the U.S. Well, what's a teles, or how does is it telemedicine or telestroke? How does that work?
Yeah. Yeah, telestroke is just a kind of a quick way of referring to telemedicine for stroke care. So let me just back us up a minute to help make sure that we're all on the same page with the listener. So a stroke happens when an artery to the brain that brings blood flow to the brain gets blocked and the flow is interrupted. And the analogy that I like to use is if your sprinkler, one of your sprinklers in your lawn stops working, then if you don't fix it within a day or two, you're going to have a big patch of yellow on your lawn. Well, your brain is organized the same way. There's a sprinkler system that goes to your brain, and a stroke is when one of those gets blocked. The problem is, unlike days, in your brain you have minutes, because if you don't restore the blood flow within minutes, brain cells start to die. And every minute that the stroke goes untreated, that the blood flow remains blocked, 2 million brain cells are dying, along with the 14 billion connections they have to other cells and the 7.5 miles of fiber that they use to make those connections, and those don't grow back. So treating a stroke is critical, and the sooner you can treat it, the greater the chances of a complete recovery. And that's why getting to a stroke center, knowing what a stroke is, calling 911 is so important. So how do you get...
Go ahead. How do you know you're having a stroke? Isn't a stroke almost silent? Am I wrong?
Oh, not at all. Actually, that's a great question, okay. And a lot of people don't know a lot about the warning signs of stroke, which is part of why we're trying to get the word out. So unlike a heart attack that presents with pain or shortness of breath or pain down the arm, stroke presents symptoms that can easily be recognized with the following simple acronym called FAST. The F is for face, if the face is crooked or droopy. A is for arm, if the arm is weak or numb, doesn't work properly. S is for speech, if the speech is slurred or the person is unable to speak or can't really understand what's being said to them. Any of those could be a sign of an important stroke. And the T is for time. It's an emergency, so it's time to call 911 and get help immediately.
Okay. All righty. So call 911 is the optimum to do at a moment where I guess this has occurred?
Yes, because the worst thing you can do is say, well, let me go lie down and see if it gets better. Because while you're lying down, if it's a stroke, millions of brain cells are dying unnecessarily. So the worst thing you can do is wait. And people just have to get over the reluctance or the embarrassment that they might be calling 911 for something that turns out not to be a stroke. That's okay. The harm that happens by delay is much more important than the time that you spend going to the hospital to be evaluated. So very, very important. But if you live in a big city and you have access to a big academic teaching hospital, there's going to be a stroke team there. But what if you're like a third of Americans who live more than an hour away from a stroke center? Their nearby hospital might not have any stroke experts available to help evaluate you. And so you could sit in that emergency room for a long time or be put back in an ambulance and sent somewhere else. That's where telemedicine comes in. So telemedicine overcomes the barriers of time and distance by beaming the neurologist, the stroke expert, into the emergency room where the patient is located. And by looking at the brain scans, examining the patient over the video screen, getting the information necessary and working with the doctors at the bedside, telemedicine or telestroke allows you to start those life-saving treatments right away with an injection of a clot-busting medicine called TPA into the vein and identifying those patients who have bigger, more severe strokes that might require a catheter to be threaded up into the brain to extract the blood clot. And so making that decision right then and there, is this somebody who needs to be transferred to a hospital that can provide that extra kind of treatment?
Okay. There's also these smaller offshoots of major hospitals that are popping up, especially, well, we're in New York. I don't know how much they are everywhere else. But on every corner is now a little bit of a hospital center. How about those? Are they prepared to handle a stroke?
Well, I think there's a really important difference between an urgent care center, which is what you might be describing,
right.
Those are like walk-in clinics that can handle minor emergencies, cuts, bruises, sore throats. They're really not appropriate as a place that an ambulance should take you if you're having a stroke. But big hospitals in New York are partnering with community hospitals in New York, just like they are all over the country, to use telemedicine to bring that New York hospital stroke expert or that Massachusetts or that Kentucky or that, you know, you name it, into the emergency department of that more less well-resourced hospital right in your neighborhood. That's what you want to make sure is covered by Medicare and is in a position where that service can be made available. Because right now, Medicare only pays for telestroke consultations, telemedicine consultations, if they happen in a very rural area in this country. But 90% of strokes are happening in urban and suburban areas where Medicare doesn't cover this. So we're working hard with our senators and representatives in Congress to support the FAST Act, FASD, Furthering Access to Stroke Telemedicine, and the Chronic Care Act to get these bills passed that include language that helps to extend Medicare coverage for these services.
And I imagine also want to inform those rural hospitals, like you have 27 rural community hospitals in Massachusetts as part of your telestroke network here. You want them to also know that somebody can partner with them, right?
Exactly. Yep, help is available. You know, most of these hospitals can't attract and retain a stroke expert full-time because they don't have enough patients, and it's too much work for just one person to be on call, you know, 24/7, 365. So it's a way of extending that expertise out from the big cities to blanket the country with stroke expertise.
Let me ask you a question, and then this might only apply to heart attack or concerns in that regard. Do you take an aspirin if you're starting to have all this face, arm, speech situation occurring with yourself? Is an aspirin a wise thing to consider?
Paul, I'm so glad you asked that question. And the answer is no, unfortunately, because we don't know for sure that it's a stroke. It could be a brain hemorrhage, a bleeding type of stroke. And if that's the case, the aspirin could make it worse. So what you need to do is call 911 and then have the person sit down, be in a safe place where they're not going to fall or hurt themselves, and wait for 911 to arrive. That's the best thing that you can do.
Okay. And pre-stroke, life-wise, in your observation as a professor of neurology, what can us human beings do so we don't get a stroke?
Right. So stroke is largely preventable. Up to 80% of strokes could be prevented if people had a
healthy... One more time. 80% of strokes could be preventable, something like that?
Yes, 80% if people did really just the simple seven things we call life simple seven. Three of them you do with your doctor. Reduce your blood pressure, your blood cholesterol, and your blood sugar. Make sure they're all in good control. And four things you do on your own. Improve your diet, exercise daily, control your weight, and stop smoking if you're a cigarette smoker. And if you can do those things, you can cut your risk of stroke dramatically. And in fact, we have a challenge going on this month for the month of May. We're calling it 30 for 30. So the hashtag 30x30 stop stroke. We want people to exercise for 30 minutes a day for 30 days in a row in the month of May to see how easy it is to actually fit this into your life and understand the benefits of making exercise a habit rather than something you just do, you know, kind of on a day that you feel like it or when it requires real willpower.
That's some very important information, and I thank you for it. What's good news for you?
Good news for me is more people taking care of themselves so that we have healthy, happy people around us.
Okay. What else can we ask for? Dr. Schwamm, thank you very much, American Heart Association, for the phenomenal work that they continue to do. And I appreciate and honored to have the opportunity to share this important, these important thoughts. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.